The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome you back. Great to have you here for the second hour. Andy Staples in the first hour. And Stephen M. Smith joining us now. And I've got to talk to Stephen M. Smith because he is my go-to in Tuscaloosa. And Stephen M., you told me in the offseason this would be the best Alabama defense and the offense would be explosive. And I look up and Alabama, I was gone over the weekend. I was hunting or fishing or whatever people do in the fall. And I just found out Alabama lost a game. What's going on here?
It's crazy. I mean, it's crazy, Paul, when you think about it. I mean, you go back and you look on paper, especially all summer long, the conversation was about, you know, this defense and how improved and how good it was going to be. And then, of course, you look at Bryce Young, first-year starting quarterback, taking over for one Mac Jones. Now, Bryce Young has made some big plays, especially in two hostile environments, but definitely give Jimbo Fisher credit. He made some comments over the summer about he was going to beat Nick Saban's butt while Saban was still there, and Jimbo did it.
Yeah, Stephen, I'm glad you fixed the camera. I thought for a second the signals were being called on your camera shot by Pete Golden, the way that thing was slipping away. So
you got me on that one, Paul. You got me on that. You got me on that.
Okay, I want to talk. I'll get to the offense, back to the offense in a second. But tell me about this Alabama defense. And I'm not – listen, I joked with you, but we have a lot of similar friends, and they were all telling us the same thing. And I'm still perplexed because – I know there's some injuries. That's okay. Everybody has injuries in the middle of the season. But this just doesn't look right. Can you help explain what the issues are?
Well, number one, it's – Saban's been talking about this all offseason. It's, number one, where are the leaders of the team? You know, where are the guys policing a lot of these young players? And that's what made Alabama defense so special in recent years under Nick Saban, is you've always had those guys, whether it was a Jonathan Allen or a Reuben Foster or a Tim Williams, just a group of guys that knew when it's time to get serious, it's time to get serious. And they were able to step up, get in front of a team, tell people, hey, shut up, Saban, talk, we got to get some work done. And they were able to kind of reel those young guys in line and get this team going defensively. And the thing where Coach Saban is concerned is trying to locate who are those guys on this year's team. You got a Will Anderson as a sophomore linebacker who is very passionate, and he wants to be one of those guys, and that's great. But who comes up behind him? Because right now, opposing offenses, they're thinking, you remove 31, you take Anderson out the picture, Bama soft. They got nobody else. You remove 31, we can pretty much do whatever we want to do on this Bama defense, against this Bama defense, because Anderson is the only dog that they have. So the primary thing here, Paul, is locating who are the players that are policing this team from a defensive perspective.
Talking to Stephen M. Smith. Stephen M., let's talk about Bryce Young for a second. And, you know, he gets a lot of criticism from fans. You've heard it all. And I'm curious how you have evaluated what he has done so far.
I thought he's actually done a really good job here, Paul. I mean, you think about it. He's gone into two hostile environments. He's went into the Swamp and Gainesville and threw for three touchdowns, played really well down there, kept his poise, kept his composure about himself. And then even though some things did not go right against A&M at Kyle Field, a lot of that's not on him. He suffered drop passes, John Metchie dropping passes, and that's unlike Metchie. You have Jahlil Billingsley dropping passes. Cameron Latu drops a touchdown pass. You have the protection on the right side of the offensive line giving up sacks. And even with all of that, Bryce Young in the fourth quarter, when you needed big throws in Aggie Land, he made big throws. So I feel like you got spoiled with the deep ball of Tua Tagovailoa. You got spoiled with the deep ball of Mac Jones. And both of those two guys are different in their own right. But this is a young man in his first year starting. And not only his first year starting, Paul, his first year starting after COVID, where you didn't have these loud, hostile environments. You didn't have all of this adversity. You didn't have teams really punching you and punching you and punching you in the mouth. You know, Alabama kind of coasted 2020 to the college football playoff because it didn't have to deal with that friction in terms of coming from not only the other team, but the crowd in those environments. So this is the first time in the first year since 2019 for Bryce Young to deal with all of that adversity, all of these different environments he has to go into. And for the most part, I thought he's done well.
Talking to Stephen M. Smith. Stephen M., let's look at the rest of the way here, starting Saturday night in Starkville. And again, you can't play the on paper game because a week ago the upset shouldn't have occurred. But as you look at the season, what would concern you before we get to the SEC championship game? Is there a game on the schedule that you're looking at and going, ooh, this could be a problem?
I'm looking at it right now. If not this one right here against Mississippi State, certainly Arkansas down the road. But Mississippi State, I mean, two of the teams that always gives Nick Saban and Alabama its toughest, hardest tests that they've always been Mississippi State and, of course, South Carolina, coached by Spurrier in the early years of Nick Saban. And Mike Leach, that air raid offense is starting to take root in Leach's second year. Will Rogers has greatly improved at quarterback. They got some big dudes from the outside at receiver, led by Mekhi Polk and guys like Jaden Whaley. You know, both of those two guys combined for 4 touchdown receptions this year. And they've got some defense too, especially a big-time corner in Emmanuel Forbes. So this matchup in Cowbell Nation, a third hostile environment, this is a little bit of a concern to me.
Understandably so. With all the conversation about Georgia, and I know that's a long way off, I mean, how do you evaluate the rest of the way, even beyond that game this weekend? And, you know, there's still Tennessee and obviously Arkansas and Auburn. But Georgia looms ahead. Are we looking too far ahead? Because you just got through saying that this team could be vulnerable.
I'm going to say this. I don't think you should be looking too far ahead. I think this week is going to tell a lot about how does this Alabama team respond from a loss, right? Because we've seen in years past, whether it was the 2011 team of a 2012 team or 2015, 2017, how those teams were able to pick themselves up off the mat following a loss. But the difference was with those teams, like I said, you had those leaders that policed the whole group and said, hey, let's get this thing right. This ain't Bama. This ain't how we operate here. This is not how we orchestrate here. Let's get things back in order. With this team, this weekend, we're going to start to see who are those guys. We've been asking this whole time, who are those guys that are going to stand up in that room and kind of say, Coach Saban, sit down. You don't got to say a word. We taking this thing over now. So this weekend, Paul, we figure out, who are those guys running this team?
Who would you bet on?
Who would I bet on? That's a good question, Paul. If behind Will Anderson, I think the guy I bet on is going to be Fadarian Mathis on the defensive line. This is a fifth-year senior from Louisiana, came in that 2017 class. He was in the rooms with a lot of those guys, the Minka Fitzpatricks at that time, the Quinnen Williams, the Isaiah Bugs. You know, he was in the room with those emotional guys. So it's time for a player like Fadarian Mathis to speak. It's time for a player like a Jordan Battle, you know, to speak. Another one of those older guys got to see these seniors, these juniors, these guys that have been through some stuff, step up here and take control of his defense.
Always great to talk to Stephen M. Smith. Stephen M., thank you. We appreciate your thoughts very, very much. We will continue here with more of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Great to have you here. It's been an entertaining show so far, and Stetson is up next. How are you, Stetson?
Real good, Paul. I was intrigued by what Harold said, not about the Affleck part. Not that it was kind of a outfield kind of thing, but the idea that there is a difference in Saban now. And I wanted you to think about something and give me your gut opinion about something. Saban, like all great coaches, has always been that guy. I win a national championship. 30 seconds later, I'm on the phone getting a new recruit.
Right.
I'm marching forward. When he came out with that ultimate team, it almost sounded like a sign-off. It was so un-Saban-like. And if anybody deserved to have a sign-off, it's Saban. He is the ultimate college coach. But something...
Stetson, the problem. Here's the problem for Nick Saban. And it's the greatest of all time. Don't compete with others. They compete with their own legacy. And that is where he is right now. It's absolute perfection. And when it doesn't happen, we try to...
And what is that saying to the next team?
It's a problem. And you know, it was wrong of all of us to think he could lose what he lost last season and just be perfect again. But that's what we're conditioned to. And we forget that most of his championships, of his seven national championships, five have come with a loss. They have not been perfect seasons. And I don't know. I don't think this
did
story's
that show,
over yet.
Did that show strike you odd that he did that?
At the end of last season, you mean?
When he did the ultimate team in again,
yeah,
they were the ultimate team.
I think what he was saying was this was such a difficult year. But you're right about Saban. I've told this story a million times. I'll never forget it. I saw him the week after he won his first title at Alabama. We were in Houston together for the Paul Bryan Award, and I did what anybody would do, Stetson. You walk up, you give the perfunctory congratulations. It was 1 week to the moment that he'd won the title. And he didn't say thank you. He didn't say appreciate it. He said, yeah, you know, that's great, but all that does is present me with a whole different set of problems. I'm like going, man. And what he meant by that is he missed a week in recruiting, and he was angry about it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I love great coaches of college. I can go all the way back to my early days of being in the 60s when all you could watch is Notre Dame. Because that was all that was on television, and you had great coaches, and you can go right through the Oklahomas, the Nebraskas, the Alabamas, and all the way up until today. And I love what they have done, and I've always followed them and had a great feel for them. And it was almost sad because I even being a Florida fan and loving Florida a bunch, He's like a history maker. He's the ultimate coach, and it just sounded like a sign off when he did that.
Well, Stetson, let me say this. Thanks. I think it was more just relief that and a tribute to his players for enduring the difficulties of COVID. But you know, he changes the subject very quickly after a win like that. Hey, thank you for the call. I do appreciate it. Trey is up next in Tuscaloosa. Hello, Trey.
How are you, my friend?
Trey, we are well. Thank you.
Well, Paul, in the famous words of Aaron Rodgers, it's one game, R-E-L-A-X. How about that, Paul?
That's good.
Hey, I got three quick questions for you today. Is that all right?
You can ask as many as you like.
A guy called in yesterday talking about Alabama needed to lose and A&M went out. Could they make the playoffs? Well, Paul, if I'm not mistaken, don't Mississippi State and Arkansas have to lose a game too?
But they will. I mean, if A&M is still in contention, then that means they would have beaten. That's how I saw your question. That means they would have beaten everyone else.
Well, no, lost Mississippi State and Arkansas. They already lost to Mississippi State and Arkansas.
Yeah, but I just assume that for that to happen, they would be out of the picture. But right now, they still have something to say about it.
Right. I kind of agree. But I still don't think they'll get in. I think Georgia would get in over them and stay in, and they'd keep another SEC team out. But my other two questions, Paul. When was the last time two SEC East teams were 6-0 this late in the season? Can you recall?
Yes, we had a graphic of it yesterday, and it's been a long time.
Okay, my last question: do you think maybe the NIL is affecting this Alabama football team any?
Possibly.
I think chemistry's bad. That offensive line didn't block like they'd been blocking. I just think, you know, we all talked about how the NIL and the transfer portal was going to help all these powerful teams. Well, you know, you might kind of turn that around. It could start hurting some of these teams. You know, when you're young, it's hard to accept some of that kind of stuff. That, you know, when somebody's making this much money and you're working just as hard and you're only getting that much money, I just think that could potentially become some problems. And I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you for my call.
Thank you, Trey. Good to have you on. Let's continue with Shannon next. Hello, Shannon. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Good to see you. Looking good today.
Thank you.
I think that one of the things that's really impressed me this season in college football is the impact of home field advantage. I think it's really been dominant this year more than any other year. Would you agree, or am I off track on that?
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, so I think a lot of what Alabama faced was, you know, you got young kids who were in front of 101,000 screaming Aggies, you know, and that had a lot to do with it. And with that being said, I'm looking at Kentucky's schedule, and I don't know if much has been made of it, but, Paul, they've played five of their six games at home this season, which I think has gone
a
long way.
Yeah, the only game,
I
believe Kentucky's only road game has been to South Carolina.
Yeah, and in that game at South Carolina, you know, they won 16-10, but everything else, with the exception of Louisiana Monroe and LSU, has been one score or less. So, as a Georgia fan, I will say that I am much more comfortable with the game being in Athens this Saturday than it being in Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And, you know, I mean, Kentucky has had a fortunate schedule in that Florida and, you know, Florida and LSU have been at home. But Missouri, which we all thought would be a bellwether game. So of those three, only Florida is a legitimate contender. And, you know, Kentucky has to go to Mississippi State in a couple of weeks. But other than that, I can't predict Tennessee right now. I need to see what they do Saturday night against Ole Miss. But, you know, Kentucky is still primed for a really great season, even regardless of what happens Saturday.
And Paul, I think I've called several times, and I think I've been pretty clear. I mean, I admire what Coach Stoops does at Kentucky. I think he does a tremendous job, and I'm in no way trying to belittle their accomplishments. I just think the challenge they're going to face this week is going to be similar to what Alabama faced last week. They're going to be in a hostile environment, you know. And you look at the impact it had when Florida came there. I think Florida's 15 penalties had as much to do with Florida losing that game. I mean, Florida beat themselves as much as Kentucky beat them. And I'm not taking anything away from Kentucky by saying that, but Florida struggled with composure in that game. And I think being there had a lot to do with it.
No, by the way, I agree with you on that. And Stoops said as much to us Friday afternoon when we were in Lexington. Thank you for the call. Let's grab some more calls here. And Bob is in Oregon. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Quite well, thank you.
So after what happened last weekend with Alabama and, everybody having a year off before, I think this is a topsy-turvy, crazy year. And I think almost anything can be predicted. And as a lifelong Gator who lives in Oregon now, I'm going to predict that they're going to beat Georgia at the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. And then they're going to go on to win the SEC championship.
Yeah, listen, and Bob, Bob, it's 1:30 in the afternoon in Oregon. Is that right?
Yeah.
My advice to you, if you'll hear me out for just 20 seconds, is lay off the lunchtime drinking, okay? We'll take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Ivan Maisel in the next hour.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You back. It's been a fun show. First 90 minutes. Let's go to Tanya in Houston. Hello, Tanya.
Hi. How are you?
I am well. Thank you. Great to have you on.
Well, Paul, I don't know if you remember this story or not, but, you know, back in May, Jimbo came to the Touchdown Club of Houston, and somebody asked him what his plan was to beat Alabama if he was going to wait for Saban to retire. And he responded, no, we're going to beat his ass while he's still there. I'm sure you remember the story, right?
Of course. Yeah. In fact, I asked Coach about it the other day.
Okay. Well, that was me that asked him the question.
Really?
Yep.
Tell us more. So were you just in the audience or what was your reason to ask that question?
I was just in the audience. I was an invited guest of somebody that was there and happened to be fortunate enough to be sitting at the first table, and he did his speech and then he asked, does anybody have any question? I actually was the first question. I raised my hand and just said, tell us about the quarterbacks. What can we expect this year? And, you know, between King and Calzada and all that. And then he answered that. And then he took five or six or seven other questions. And I had raised my hand, but then kind of realized we were short on time. So I put my hand back down. And he was like, well, do you have another question? I said, yeah, but we're short on time. It's not important. He was like, no, go ahead, because I was starting to chicken out. And so I said, all right, everybody wonders. I'm just the only one that has enough guts to ask, you know, other than Saban retiring, what's our plan to beat Alabama? And I really thought he was going to give me not the plan, but like, hey, we've identified areas that they're weak in that we can capitalize on or some sort of football answer. I had no idea that he would come back and say that. But, yes, I did see where he said his competitiveness got the best of him. And the bad thing is when he gave that answer for the next couple of weeks, I got texted, Facebook message, calls, and said, gee, thanks. All you did was give Alabama more motivation. They probably have that hanging in their locker room. We're going to blame you when we get our butts kicked and blah, blah, blah. And that was even when we were still, you know, we didn't realize that we were falling apart as a football team. And so I was a little worried going into this game, and I my friend actually, my husband took a picture of me and my friend. I actually started crying at the end of the game just because I felt like the weight of the world was lifted off my shoulders.
That is amazing that so much would come of that. I mean, yeah, I remember when it happened, and I think we talked to Brent Zwerneman that day, and it was funny, and I think you had to have a sense of humor about it, but nobody really took it seriously.
I remember somebody calling into your show saying that they were mad about that, and that, you know, I remember there was this guy that called in pretty upset about the whole thing, and you even said, hey, it was tongue-in-cheek. Don't take it so personal, you know?
Yeah, and I even though I've talked to Coach quite a few times since then, I don't think it's ever come up other than but Monday it just seemed appropriate, and I was surprised by his answer. He was very forthright about it. I think the Aggies owe you a debt of gratitude. You planted the seed.
Well, I was like either going to be hiding out for the next few weeks, or obviously I'm on cloud nine. Today's the first day I've been able to talk. I lost my voice on Saturday and I still don't quite have it back, but I was fortunate enough to be able to sit in very good seats, not the president's ones that you alluded to the first time. But and after that, I actually did go up to Coach and say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to like put you on the spot. I didn't expect that answer. He goes, no, you didn't do anything wrong. So he wasn't upset about it. But a lot of other Aggies were for some reason.
I just have one question for you as we conclude here. And I'm not trying to steal Nick Saban's thunder, but were you talking about football or golf?
I was talking about golf, but yeah, that was, I've actually got that scorecard that I think you showed it earlier in the week. I've got that on my Facebook page, and my profile picture is Saban screaming at the top of his lungs right now. And by the way, the fan, I'm not sure what sort of fan, but the guy that called in earlier to start your show about we were faking injuries. I'm not sure what injuries he thinks we were faking, but I was there at the game with a very good view, and I didn't see any injuries being faked.
Well, Tanya, thanks for sharing what's a really interesting subplot to the game. You be well, and all the best.
No, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. What an interesting story, how it all happened, because nobody was going to ask him that. And I think it probably helped that a layperson, as opposed to a reporter, asked, because I think he let his guard down. If we had asked, he would have given predictable coach speak. Jeffrey is in Kentucky. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hey, Paul. How are you today?
We are well. Thank you.
Paul, that was a great call that was talking to you from Houston, was it not?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Hey, Paul, I just want to tell you that yesterday when you was talking to Miss Faye from Virginia, the 83-year-old female.
Oh, yeah.
She was awesome, was she not? And that was a very good conversation that you guys had.
Well, I'm glad you liked it, because I agree. She was cool. It was so unique and just such a positive outlook on life.
And I just want, I'm sure she's listening today. I want her to know that Saban's going to be 77 at the end of this contract, and which is 7 years from now. And he is going to have more wins than Bobby Bowden, which is, you know, as we all know, which is 359. So Saban's going to have more wins than that. So Alabama should bring him back for three more years, because all he has to have is average 13 wins. 13 out of 15 is what it is right now. But by the time we get to 2028, it's going, as we all know, it's going to be more like 16 games or maybe 17. I'm not sure.
You're right. Hey, Jeffrey, thank you very much. By the way, USA Today just came out with its annual compensation statistics, and Nick Saban is number one with the highest salary in college football at $9.7 million. Who do you think is number two? Jimbo Fisher will be, I believe, at the end of this season. But as of this moment, he is the number two coach is Ed Ogeron at $9.01 million, and his buyout is only $17.15 million. Let's continue with more phone calls, and Rob is up next in Tennessee. Hey, Rob, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, how's it going?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, Paul, I have two questions. So my first question is, what was Lane Kiffin's record his first year at the University of Tennessee?
7-6. He lost the bowl game.
Okay. All right. And my second question is, in your opinion, if Tennessee beats Ole Miss Saturday night, should Tennessee be nationally ranked?
If Tennessee beats Ole Miss, yes, I think so. Absolutely.
Oh, great. All right. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. Logan in Georgia, you are on the air. Hello, Logan. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today?
Quite well. Thank you.
All right. So I got a couple of things to talk about today. I called at the beginning of the season asking you about Josh Heupel's offense, asking you how you thought Joe Milton would do and everything. Of course, Joe Milton went down to that injury. With Hendon Hooker having the number one quarterback rating in the SEC and the number five nationally, do you think that our offense is explosive enough to go blow for blow with Ole Miss? And do you think maybe our defense is good enough to maybe get a couple stops on Ole Miss?
Logan, I think that's exactly where the game comes down to. When you play Ole Miss, it's about stops, because I don't have any doubt both offenses are going to be explosive. And, you know, can you make a couple of stops? Because if you can, you change the entire dynamics of the game. More bad news, by the way, from Baton Rouge. Brody Miller reporting, I don't know how it can get much worse than this, but it continues to get worse every single day. LSU defensive end Ali Gay will need surgery and is expected to miss the rest of the season. LSU may be without its four top prospects for the rest of the season and will play Florida without five defensive starters. This is from a team that was already under severe pressure. We'll take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are back, and this is a couple of minutes ago, Andy Staples saying, enjoying Feinbaum explaining to a caller that Nick Saban doesn't do the Aflac commercials live and that he isn't spending more time on that than before. We had a caller that was very critical, Harold, who accused Saban of shirking his job responsibility by doing the Aflac commercial. We did a chart, our staff here. This is before Aflac and after. And it's pretty dramatic. 906 winning percentage after. This is the first loss, I think, since the Aflac commercial premiered. And, you know, overall, one national championship. So we'll have to debate this. I'll have to watch this as the season unfolds. A reminder, and I said this earlier, and I hope people took it for heart. Saban has traditionally taped the Aflac commercials in mid-July, right before media days or around that time, a week or two before the season starts. He is not doing those commercials while the game is going on Saturday night. Let's I don't know why I had to explain that. I just thought maybe I better. Let's check in with Zach in Georgia. Hello, Zach. Zach, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can, thank you.
Yeah, so I had a quick question about LSU. I have been looking back at their last two championship teams, and I'm really starting to get the feeling as I look at history that Les Miles and Ed Orgeron had little to nothing to do with those championships. Now, hear me out on this.
Okay.
Ed Orgeron, obviously the 2019 team, which is considered one of the greatest of all time, largely looking back at it, had to do with Joe Brady, Dave Aranda, and just guys on that team. You look at Les Miles' championship season, that was with Nick Saban's leftovers, basically, on LSU that he recruited. And you look at what Les Miles did sort of with his own things. Yes, he had a couple of decent years. But it just seems like the last two coaches they've had really weren't good coaches. When you look at it.
Your dog obviously does not agree, Zach.
Yeah, I know. They do not.
And by the way, this is just the dog lover in me. What type of dog do you have?
They are two long-haired miniature dachshunds.
Oh, wonderful. My first dog was a dachshund. Never forget it.
Yeah.
Miniature, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah. They're crazy.
Well, I was 7 years old. I didn't understand the craziness. I just he was my best friend. What can I say? Hey, well, good point. No argument. I don't think Les or Ed will ever make anybody's all-time greatest coaches list, although I will say this about Les Miles. As crazy as he was, he had some good moments. He did. He was I don't know how he did it, but he did it. And ultimately, the head coach is responsible for the staff. So I know it's easy to say, well, they have great assistants, but the head coach is the guy who brings those assistants in. Let's check in with Bruce in Florida. Hello, Bruce.
Hey, Paul. Hey, how you doing, Paul?
I'm well, thank you.
I just wanted to make sure I heard that caller from Oregon right. I'm a big Gator fan, and you made it sound like you don't give us any chance of beating Georgia. Is that true?
Well, I didn't say that. I just asked him. He said that the Gators would win this week and beat Georgia. And I just asked him. I just wondered about how much he was drinking.
Quit drinking.
If you asked me today to predict the game, I don't think that would be. I would have to spend a lot of time analyzing it. But it's 2 weeks off.
Yeah, but I see. It's like some caller said earlier. Every streak comes to an end. And Georgia, yesterday, there was a guy who said in one of the things on the bottom of the TV that Georgia wasn't going to lose a game for another 5 to 10 years. He's the one that needs to stop smoking something because every streak comes to an end. If we've got a chance, Dan Mullen always does a good job of preparing for Alabama and Georgia, stuff like that.
I don't know why you're concerned about that. I mean, I would be more concerned about LSU right now than I would Georgia.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I just heard that, and I was like, he ain't giving us no chance.
Well, that's a fair – that may be a fair statement when we do our show 2 weeks from now in Jacksonville, but it's not a fair statement completely yet. Could be one, though. let's talk to Big B in Shelby, North Carolina. Hello, Big B.
Hey, Paul, how you doing today?
We are doing well. Thank you.
I just got a comment to make about I enjoy listening to Jim call into your show, and I'm inclined to agree with him, and I, man's a moron. But I got another quick question. How many players was drafted off of Alabama squad last year by the NFL?
I think there were six in the first round. I'll double-check that number, but that was it was pretty enormous. Thanks, Big B. Talk soon. Let's try to grab one more here. Bumper is up next. Hey, Bumper.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today?
Really well. Thank you.
Well, thank you for letting me call into this show. I just wanted to talk to you about Will Muschamp and about what you see for him in the future, because he's at South Carolina right now. He stepped down from some fairly big roles. And, he's not at South Carolina, but he's at Georgia. My apologies. But my friend over here thinks that he'd be a good coach at Florida State. And I have my opinion, but I want to hear what you think about that.
Well, Will Muschamp has had two head coaching opportunities, and I think they have both ended in similar fashion. So I don't know why. First of all, I don't think Florida State is about to make a change yet. I hope he finds success. I think he's a superb defensive coordinator and a very average head coach.
Oh, I'd have to agree with you there. And if I could ask one more thing, I would ask this. do you really see Mike Norvell staying at Florida State past one more year, two more years, or do you see him, you know, just getting?
It's hard to call. I mean, he's off to a really rocky start, but if he can stop the bleeding right now, he might make it.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.